97.5, The Fanatic.
Oh, back at it from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. Joe Torty, Devon Givens with Josh Rabick as we run until 10 o'clock on this Tuesday evening. 610-632-0975 is how you reach us. 7:59 on this night. Yes.
Absolutely. We haven't gotten to our side topic, speaking as we approach
do we even do it at this point?
I mean, we could say it's evergreen.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. But we do need to go on the bubble watch and see what's going on there.
Yes.
Because people still talking about the food and all. And I showed you guys. I said, hey, you got to see PJ Tucker and the lobster that he had with the steak and noodles and all of that. And these guys, Rashawn Holmes and Bruno Caboclo, are getting in trouble for crossing the line at Disney.
Michael Beasley went somewhere.
Michael Beasley. That's going to bubble watch right now. Michael Beasley tested positive, and he had to go back home.
See ya.
Had to go back home.
Late signing, too. He just signed like 3 days ago, 4 days ago, right?
Yeah, he and Jamal Crawford did just sign. You haven't heard anything about Crawford. This is a shame, too, because I was a Michael Beasley guy coming out of Kansas State.
How could you not have been? That dude was a monster.
He was a monster there and coming out of Kansas State. And I thought that he was just, look, he's had some really good seasons in the league, but just so much stuff has followed him. And I was happy that he was going to get another opportunity here with the Brooklyn Nets. And Sean Marks, the general manager, actually came out and said how he felt that they were going to get a nice look at both Crawford and Beasley and possibly looking at them for next season. Since things are going to turn over so quickly, Kevin Durant and his relationship growing up with Michael Beasley in the Baltimore area, that guys have clout, right? You bring your guys in, and it's not like Michael Beasley can't play ball. So once again, he had to go home, and he might lose this spot. He might lose the spot. I don't know if you'll have the opportunity to get this one back.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. Pretty rough for Beasley.
Could you? We asked Barrett this. Could you eat the food that you've been seeing in the bubble?
Oh my God, easily, I could eat the food that I've been seeing in the bubble. Like, here's the thing. I believe firmly. Was it LeBron who went off on that dude who was like, "My job is not like your job." I think that was a LeBron James quote.
I didn't see this.
Yeah, I mean, this is years ago.
Okay.
Like somebody's like, "Oh, I would do this, or if it were me, blah blah blah." And he says, "My job's not your job. Like my job's not like your job."
Yeah, it's different.
I'm a big proponent of that. However, if you're battling the like image that you're like spoiled crybaby jerks who like are entitled and everything like that, and you're complaining about the free food that Disney World is giving, it's not a great look. It's like not an incredible look when there's a lot of people that are laid off and trying to figure out where food's going to come from.
It is not a good look.
So I approve of Ish Smith and PJ Tucker and all the other people.
JJ Barea.
Yeah, JJ Barea. And, you know, what are you guys complaining about? We got all this food that they're bringing to us and then we eat it. There's not a whole lot that we got to talk about here.
I'm telling people, check out PJ Tucker on his, I guess it was his Instagram, where you check it out and you'll see what PJ Tucker had. Seriously, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah. It was what you'd make at home. If you were doing surf and turf at home, lobster, steak, rice, some pasta there. It looked fine to me.
It looked pretty good to me.
Could you do it? Could you do the bubble?
Yeah, I think I could. No, I definitely could. I mean, you know me. I don't rock the boat on it with a lot of things, so I could definitely do the bubble. We're talking about, you're talking about basketball. Then they give you all of these other things to do. I'm not a fisher, but I bet you if I was there, I would be fishing.
Yeah.
I would be learning these things. I would be playing ping pong. I would be going to the arcade that Patrick Beverly showed us that they have down there. I would definitely be outside and doing whatever other things that they have available to us. Because why not? Right? Why not? We have the opportunity to do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. So, yeah, I think I could survive
inside
the bubble.
You seem the type.
I could survive inside the bubble. 610-632. Josh, could you survive inside the bubble, the food and all the things that come with it here?
I can say dead seriously, no. No shot.
Why not?
What would be the hardest part?
Well, if we're talking Instagram models hitting you up, I mean, I'd be running full sprint.
The honesty's real.
We ask for it.
And you know what? Josh lives that life every day. Like, yes, he's used to the Instagram models hitting him up. And so he's got to make those choices about even just like coming to work and stuff on a day-to-day basis.
I'm used to the Instagram models blocking me.
Oh, that's okay. I couldn't remember what it was. It was some kind of interaction with them. Yeah.
All right. They will be blocking you inside the bubble too, huh?
Oh, man.
All right. You got it, man. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Nolan and Glenmore next on The Fanatic. Nolan, what's going on?
Fellas, how you doing?
Doing all right, thank you.
Good. I'm glad you dealt with the real issues here, you know, eating lobster in a family world resort.
That's right.
I'm happy we're hitting the important subjects here on Tuesday night.
Prayers for those guys.
Correct.
Prayers up for those guys.
Thoughts and T's and P's. Anyway, so I got to say, this Ben Simmons move before, I don't mind it. I think it's the right move, but it definitely feels desperate, and it feels like the white flag coming from the Elton Brand and Brett Brown camp. I wanted to get your guys' take on something. So I think this is it. I think if this doesn't work and these guys aren't meshing together and we're not getting a good product out there, I'd rather think the coach is going, the GM's going, or Ben or Joe's going. And if you think that is what we're looking at, if this doesn't work out, and if that is ultimately what happens, who's more to blame? Players, Ben and Joe, or is it the coach and the GM and the ownership?
Well, right now, for me, I would think if they had some failures here, Nolan, and this one, Brett Brown would be the first one that would be gone. Elton Brand would remain, the same with Simmons and Embiid, because what I think, Nolan, would be Elton Brand would now have an opportunity to, even though he may like Brett Brown, to take a shot at hiring his own coach. With that new coach trying to see what he could do with Embiid and Simmons and see if he can unlock them in a different way and use them and get over the hump past that second round, hopefully to the finals. That's my opinion.
Do you really think there's anything else, though? Like, that's where I'm kind of at a loss with this. Like, I think it's the right move right now to put Ben at the four. I'm not against it. I think it's a good move. But I think that just shows that Brett's obviously open to something or trying and looking to try something else. So if that's not working, what's another voice or another coach going to come in and do that's going to make that situation work if it's not worked already?
Could it be the familiarity? Been here too long. You know how you always hear, Nolan and Joe, where you hear that new voice is something different versus the one that you always hear, and you kind of tune it out.
Yeah, I gotcha. And I'm open to it. I'm looking for answers here. I feel like this is like the story of the Sixers. There's all this hype. It's like, you know what? Now this is gonna work. Now it's gonna work, and then it just doesn't pan out. So I'm skeptical, to say the least. I'll tell you. I'll leave you one last thing. We're assuming a lot about Shake Milton, and I am all about Shake Milton. I like him a lot. I think he'll be a decent player, but we're basically banking on this kid's about 2 to 3 great weeks of basketball. And before that, we didn't even know if he was going to be a pro. And now we're going to start him with 8 games regular season into a playoff run. I feel like that dude is shit, like his lobster shaking in between his hands in his hotel room, nervous about this. So I'm a little worried about that. It's the last thing I'll leave you with.
Thanks, Nolan. Appreciate it, man. What you got, Joe?
Well, I mean, and Nolan's concerns are totally valid. Like, and when you're talking about a new voice, the familiarity between Ben Simmons and Brett Brown, I think, is a blessing and a curse when it comes to the way that the Sixers have been, because it's hard not to think that any other coach who didn't have Brown's experience with Simmons and his family and everything like that would literally, like, I know that there are very few hard-ass coaches anymore, but
right,
a conversation would be had where it's like, you're going to start shooting or you're going to stop playing because you're making yourself look like an idiot and you're making me look like an idiot.
And that's why, Joe, that's why I said when I spoke to Anthony earlier and I brought it up that this is on not only Ben Simmons, more on Ben Simmons, but also on Brown because of what he didn't do in year number one.
Nip it in the bud.
When you nip it in the bud, hey, come sit next to me. This is a teaching, right? He talks about teaching moments. That's a teaching moment. And people gloss over that like, ah, come on, you know, sitting down and all this stuff. No. That's a real thing we see. That's why guys have these mentors on the bench. That's why when we talked about the veteran players, the point guards, I always brought up like Ramon Sessions as my example.
Sure.
Just so he can teach him. And where we were talking about Michael Carter Williams, I don't want him talking to Tony Roten. That's the wrong guy I want him to be talking to. And while Simmons is the number one pick and he's going to be a great player in this league, it didn't mean that there wasn't something where it was like, Okay. You're not going to do this? Come here real quick.
Right.
Come sit next to me for a minute. And now he goes public where he's already an all-star, says, I need him to shoot, and you can tell his family, you can tell the rest of the media, you can put out to the fans.
But it's years later.
I need him to shoot. And Ben's like, oh, really?
Right.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Well, and here's the
and
thing.
It's too late.
If it happens early in his career, you don't even need to make it an explicit teaching moment. Just come here, sit down. Why? You need a blow. And it happens over and over and over again. It's like, coach, you're pulling me out every time I'm not taking an open jumper.
That's right.
Said, huh, how about that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are ways
especially
that it could have been done.
Study, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Huh. What happened here? That's what I'm saying. Like, I get it that people are like, oh, the players run things now. Van Gundy or Thibodeau or any of these guys who come in and are immediately just going to be like, bang, that's it. Forget it. You kidding me that those guys wouldn't have already done this? So that's that part of it. I totally agree, and I think that that's kind of what Nolan's getting at. The other problem that I have is that this team is tinkered with way too damn much. Way too much. Like we
a lot of changes.
Just constantly. Like, as you said, you would like to have had an offseason with Jimmy Butler. I'd like to have an offseason with anything. Like, I don't think it would have worked. But let's see what happens if you're doing Dario Saric and Robert Covington and everybody growing together and stuff like that and developing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if that's not going to work and you're going to blow everything up for Jimmy Butler and try. Like, the whole point at the beginning when they both sides said, yeah, we see this being a longer-term partnership. We don't see this being a one-year rental. And they lost earlier than they wanted to in the playoffs, so the whole thing gets blown up. Like, that's... My problem is that it's tough to evaluate players, coaches, personnel, all of it, GMs, when everything's constantly getting changed and you don't get a chance to watch anything organically come together over years like we've seen with the Spurs, with the Warriors, with a lot of these other teams that have become the cream of the crop.
Can I ask you this before we get back to the phones that Nolan brought up about these guys, the success that they're having and all of this with the young team? The expectations on the squad. I'm trying to frame how to ask it. It just basically, this happened very, very quickly. Are we gauging things the right way? I say yes, because once you decided to go 50 wins back to back, you've changed your expectations. You've accelerated things where we saw you go from 28 to 53 and then 51 and you were this season talking about 60 and a first seed in the Eastern Conference, making these moves, these changes that you're talking about. I think it's been fair how we've adjusted on the fly the expectations for this basketball team led by Brett Brown.
Sure, and you mean us, like as media, as fans, as people
yeah.
who watch it. Like,
sure.
So they might have the opinion of, like, how do you expect us to have all of this together when there are all these new pieces that are coming in? But every year is not a new journey for us. Like, every year is, like, conceivably building on last year, and hopefully you address your deficiencies and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I just think that there are a couple of decisions here and there that I'm not sure about. Like, do you get way better now that you have Al Horford instead of J.J. Redick? Like, I don't know. I don't know that you're way, way better. I think you might be, but I don't know. If you had J.J. Redick and instead now you're courting someone like, you know, whenever DeMarcus Cousins is healthy, does Cousins want to maybe come and play for you? Like, I don't know if there are moves that you could have made or different decisions at the time that you could have done. But what I know is it's hard for me to feel like the Sixers are building towards anything because it feels like they're trying to one-hit wonder every single season, it feels like. I don't know, man.
Okay. And again, I just think it's fair because that's just the nature of sports. You're not here forever. And when you get the plan that they had to rebuild this team and you go from 28 again and you get to the 50s and second round and even in that first year when you make the playoffs, even with LeBron James in Cleveland and everybody expecting LeBron James to get to the NBA Finals, the way things shook out with the Kyrie Irving injury with the Boston Celtics, we were all looking at them, not just here locally, but nationally,
yeah.
Looking at the Sixers saying, oh, they're the up-and-comers. They're going to knock off Boston and get to the Eastern Conference Finals before we expected them to give Cleveland a run. And then next year, that's when they're really going to take that step.
Right.
But we also thought it was important to get LeBron James as a free agent the next year
yes.
by getting to the NBA Finals, Eastern Conference Finals against Cleveland and James and showing him that, hey, this is the right place for you to come. Of course, it didn't happen. That's why I think it's the right thing to do in terms of how we look at this team now.
Sure, absolutely. I'm on board with you, man.
By the way, that when we were talking about the food, Jeff Zilgit is the one of USA Today who tweeted it out like on the like 6 days ago, the NBA partnering with six restaurants to provide delivery service. So I don't know what Rashawn Holmes was thinking, but if you have on this list Morton's, Palm, Saltgrass, Del Frisco's, The Ocean Air, Joe's Crab Shack, what's the problem?
What are you thinking? I know. This is what I'm saying. Like,
what's the problem?
And believe me.
And I'm guessing that's what PJ Tucker got, you know, the stuff from.
If it's a freedom deal, like, and you're used to just being able to come and go as you please and order what you want, like, believe me, totally get it. This is not what your life is going to be like forever. Like we all know that this is like an unusual bubble type situation. For example, I get it. But do you think that the team employees and the league employees, you think they want to be there? You think that they're like super psyched to be in the bubble? And they're probably having a little bit of a different experience than you are.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep. 610-632-0975. Let's go to the phones, JT. Let's check in with Keith in Philly next on The Fanatic. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good, man.
I definitely think y'all the best basketball tandem we got now in the city.
Thank you, man.
But I want to start with, real quick, Elton Brand definitely shouldn't be tied to what Brett Brown does or don't do. Because what Elton's doing is, Elton's reaching to compensate for what Brett Brown doesn't do as a coach. You dudes know how I feel about Brett Brown as a coach. That's number one. You know, so Elton Brand, if Brett Brown doesn't do well enough and make it to the East Finals and make it competitive, he definitely should be gone. Then you give Elton his fair shot to get a coach and see if he's the GM or not. Because don't tie him to that guy after what we watched for the last couple seasons. Okay, my next point is about the start five. That's a good and bad move because Shake's not a point guard, number one, right? But so Ben should definitely have the ball more, right? So bring Shake in because Shake can score. And then you let him score. But I think the offense should run through Ben and Josh Richardson as the point guards. You know, you give it off to Josh, you let him play make. Let Shake be a scorer. Him and Tobias be your slashers, your scorers, and you run through Joel some. But definitely don't tie Elton Brand into Brett Brown like that. That's not fair to the kid. You give him his fair shot. You gave Brett Brown his 7 years or 19 years or whatever he had to give us this garbage. Give Elton Brand his fair shot.
So do you think part of that fair shot then is the ability to hire his own coach as well as drafting all these players and then giving that a run?
Definitely. I think he's actually done a good job with picking up players. But he doesn't have a guy to put the system in to get these guys to play right and play together. You have to have a system of movement, slashing, back picks. That's how you play NBA ball. And you don't coach everybody on your team to shoot a three-pointer. Especially since they're not great three-point shooters. You coach a guy to get to an open spot, knock down an open shot. That's how you play the game. Al Horford, he can hit a 15-footer. Tobias, they're all mid-range shooters. They're not three-point shooters like that.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you can take an occasional two, three three-pointers a game, but they're not guys that should shoot 10 three-pointers in a game, and you shouldn't be coached that way. If that's not what you are, that's not how you should be coached.
Listen, Keith, great stuff as always.
Thanks,
man.
Keith.
Good to hear from you. Appreciate the kind words. 610-632-0975.
Tobias Harris better be a three-point shooter.
Got to knock those shots down.
Are you kidding me?
Got to knock those shots down. The highest paid guy
on your team is like a mid-range guy? The hell are you talking about? Not Keith, but I'm just saying that Tobias Harris had better be a three. He better look a lot more like he looked on the Clippers than he's looked in his year and a half here with the...
He shot 43% from three.
This is what I'm saying.
Shake Milton, as he pointed out. Shake Milton. I don't disagree that he's more of a combo than a point.
Sure. I buy that.
I think I agree with that. But he can do both. So I don't have a problem with it again because I like the player. And I think within this offense, you have so many guys that can initiate. Simmons, Milton, and Richardson.
Yep.
Can all initiate for this team.
All three. I think that in terms of actually getting shots, you'd prefer to see Richardson and Simmons getting them before Shake, probably. Like, you know, if you just overall look at the way that the team functions. But I don't know. When Brett says that they figured something out, maybe it is that Shake needs to be more of a scoring guard. And he needs to be more of an offensive focus. I don't know. I think that to disagree with both you and Keith a little bit.
Okay.
I think that Elton Brand's done a good job. Not a great job. Like, I think that he's
A great job. I think he's done a good job.
So I really didn't care for, you know, this is not a huge secret.
Mm-hmm.
I did not care for the Tobias Harris contract the way that it was. If it's about making that guy the highest paid player on your team or keeping, you know, Butler or one of the, it seemed to me that that made sense.
What about being basically backed into the corner because of Butler deciding I'm out? And maybe that's not a Brand thing or Harris thing. That was more of a Brown and or Simmons thing.
Possible. Entirely possible that Jimmy Butler decided that he had enough with Brett Brown. So
would you have preferred Brand just be like, all right, I don't need any of you guys. I'll figure something else out. I'll take Josh Richardson, Al Horford, and figure something else out. No Tobias Harris with this big money. Well, and let's assume that you couldn't get Malcolm Brogdon because you know that
right,
was a big
name. That's a big one. Yeah,
of course.
That we
talked about.
Well, so you just kind of led me into the other one. I can almost get behind the Tobias Harris deal just because, like, you had to do something. People always pointed out, Joe, you hated all these deals. What would you have done? Like, who would you have signed? I get that you have to do something, but, like, the Al Horford contract for what you've gotten is one of the three worst contracts in the league, right?
And like, you can still clean that up, but right now it does not look good.
Yeah, so he better have been hurt. Like, he better have been hurt, as he said.
I was gonna ask you that too.
Like, that had better be the case because he's not giving you what you thought he'd give you defensively. Certainly offensively, he's not giving what we anticipated, right? So those are two contracts that I don't like while other superstars are changing teams and people are teaming up in L.A. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard end up out there and LeBron James and Anthony Davis are in Los Angeles, the Lakers. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, when all of it was getting broken down, you and I agreed, we really didn't like the process at all. But when you look at all of the superstars who have changed teams and who the Sixers have ended up with, there is no doubt about it that the Sixers ended up way worse than we would have hoped that they would have when the P word was going on.
That Butler thing hurts.
It does hurt.
The Butler thing hurts.
And it turns out he was worth the whole bag anyway. We were talking about the Kyle Lowry contract.
Yeah, remember that.
And it turns out that he was worth the whole thing anyway.
That wouldn't have been a negative either.
No, that would have been great.
He's still all-star level in his second team in the Eastern Conference when you didn't expect it because of a lot of stuff that he's doing, even though a lot of people here in his hometown don't even care for him too much. 610-632-0975. Theo, our man in Camden. Theo, hang on, man. We're coming to you. Aaron, Black Gritty, three open phone lines. 610-632-0975. The 7 o'clock hour was brought to you by Club Risqué, the Delaware Valley's premier gentlemen's club with three locations in Philly, Bristol, and Northeast Philadelphia. For more information, visit clubrisque.com. Josh Rabick, Joe Torti, I'm Devon Givens. We are with you until 10. We're right back keeping this conversation rolling right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
By the way, is it a coincidence that the steakhouses that we named are directly linked to Houston Rockets billionaire owner Tillman Fertitta? Huh? Hospitality Empire headlined by the Landry's Incorporation Restaurant Group and the Golden Nugget Casino Chain.
Hold on, what was it referred to? What were those first couple words there?
The headline, hold on. Hospitality Empire.
Yeah, how do we become part of the empire? I want to have an empire or something.
Yeah, we gotta get with Fertitta. He's cold too.
Yeah? I don't know anything about that guy.
Yeah, he's cold. He took over, of course. He bought the Houston Rockets, and he has been he's not very well liked around the league.
Oh no,
a lot of people as an owner so far.
But the stakes and stuff can't mess with him. Not to be messed with.
Yeah, there you go.
All right,
it's underneath the Landry's Incorporation umbrella. Coincidence? I think not.
I doubt it.
I think not. Especially when he's losing money from his businesses, whatever's going on during COVID. Got to do something, right? Got to do something. Joe Torre, Devon Givens with Josh Rabick, 610-632-0975. We head to Camden and check in with Theo. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I don't know whether it was Josh or Joe. They were mentioning... you didn't really get a chance to see a lot of guys work out, and you wanted to see guys together longer. But that was the whole point of the process, right? It was the fact that you were going to basically force your team to be bad, and keeping guys together basically works against, you know, basically tanking. So, that was baked into the whole, I guess, their whole theory of running a team. So... but with that being said, I'm looking at Ben Simmons at power forward, and I really, that move is a blah to me, I think. I think, first, I don't know if people have given, I haven't heard it mentioned enough, but basically they've given up on him taking more outside shots, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him play, I've watched almost every Sixer game for the last 6 years, and I've seen him play in the post, and he's really... His skills are more suited for the post, but that does not mean he is a post player. I mean, Ben is very athletic, but when you play in the post, you body guys up a lot for positioning and that sort of thing. So you're neutralizing his athleticism, one. Two, he doesn't have any feel to play in the post, really. So I think I've read some things about his body, you know, makeup being a little bit different now, him being a little bit thicker.
Yeah, he's been working out. You see him. It's very noticeable.
Yeah, but the thing is, he has no feel or sensibility for the post position. So it's, you know, and that's not something, I played the post in high school. That's not something that you're going to learn in 8 games and be ready for the playoffs. I don't care what anybody says, not at the NBA level. So
this is not new, though, to Ben Simmons on the low block. He's been doing this a lot.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it is different for him to be at the low block where he can try to face people up. But he's not a low post player. He's not a traditional low post player. He doesn't have any low post moves.
Hmm, really. I disagree.
Well, he doesn't have to have
a lot, Theo, in his bag for him, because a lot of times he has certain defenders on him where that jump hook over either shoulder works for him. When he does, as you just talked about, face up maybe, let's say, around 13, 15, and he uses his speed to get by him. You know, and especially with this extra weight that he has put on him, when he does seal these guys before he has the ball, he's right underneath the basket.
The problem is when you actually start playing against legitimate power forwards and post players, you're going to see that he really doesn't have a lot of the requisite skills there. I think what's going to end up happening is his success in the post is going to be really contingent on how well the outside shooters that they pair up with him. I mean, if Shake Milton is going to knock down outside shots and you know, some of these other guys, Kirkham Forkmaz, and those guys are going to knock down outside shots, then, yeah, because then, you know, guys that are playing in the post, they got to kind of hedge out if their guy gets beat, you know, on the wing. But if those guys aren't hitting shots and Ben is just sort of down the post, I mean, the other thing is him and Joel don't play well in the post together because he's so much quicker than Joel. And Joel is such a slower player, and that's how Joel gets stuck at the top of the key a lot of times. So I'd have to see some games, but from what I've seen up to this point, mm-hmm. The problem with this team is really, and I probably have told you this a bunch of times before,
yeah.
The problem is it's between the ears. Most of these guys don't really think the game of basketball very well. And it comes out in times in the playoffs where you've got to execute. And that's where they have difficulty because they don't think the game well. They just, they rely on athleticism. And that'll get you 50 games in the regular season. But in the postseason where you have to think about who you're passing to, think about your positioning, think about where guys are and where to place your feet, that's where they end up losing the game. And I'm interested to see, because at this point it's just musical chairs on the Titanic at this point.
Yeah, you got your eight guys and you have your nine guys potentially, and it's really going to run through your star players, and that's what it's going to be. Theo, great stuff as always, yeah. Man. Good to talk to
no
you.
Problem.
You got it, man. Joe, what did you think? First of all, with the low post stuff with Ben Simmons,
yeah.
Not changing once he goes against these power forwards.
Well, Theo made a lot of good points. I parted with him on a couple, but by and large, I think that he make some good stuff. I mean, he played NBA point guard is the first time that he's played point guard. He was a power forward at LSU. So he played against SEC level power forwards there and was the number one pick in the NBA draft. I'm not saying that he was Hakeem Olajuwon and had the whole package of low post moves, but he did reasonable. I think that SEC basketball is high level. I think that the power forward position at schools like, Florida and Kentucky and these places, you're hanging in there, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that is something that I could see foundationally. He has added that stuff to his game too. We've seen more and more every, I at least have. I feel like I've seen stuff that I didn't see from Simmons in year one and year two, especially on the low block. People talk about Ben Simmons' game hasn't improved. Well, that didn't sound right to me. So in order to refute that, I know you, this is the same thing with you. You go and you look and you watch and you pay very close attention to, yeah, obviously he's not shooting jump shots, but is there anything that looks different? And I think that answer is yes. I think that on the low block especially is where a lot of that improvements come. So I do think that it can work. I think that Simmons will not out-physical, in terms of his tools, everybody at the power forward position. There are some really good athletes there and some quick guys and agile guys and stuff like that. But I don't think that he's going to be swimming over his head. I really don't. I think it's going to be something where he can be really competitive even against these playoff teams.
All right, if they go against the Boston Celtics in the first round, we're probably looking at Jaylen Brown or Jason
or Tatum. Yeah.
Can he overpower either one of them?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably.
And they are strong.
They're strong guys. Ben's strong, too.
But you're talking strong and then a little bit of the height advantage as well, where advantage Ben, at least in that particular matchup.
Well, if he's got a baby hook, Jaylen Brown has nothing to do about it.
No.
If Jaylen Brown can be perfectly positioned, and if Ben has a baby hook, he's not contesting it.
It happens.
Exactly.
Indiana, let's assume Miles Turner is starting.
I don't like that matchup as much. Right? I don't think that he's going to overpass. That might be a skill matchup.
Exactly.
That might be a skill matchup.
Can I get by you, and will I make this something that's to my advantage?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Giannis? No.
No, that's no. A nightmare. That's a death matchup.
You're going to have to skill him.
Yeah, you're going to have to skill him, for sure.
Miami, I'm guessing
Bam?
But who's going to be on Joel? Who's going to be on Joel? Because they start Bam, Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Jimmy Butler, and between Tyler Hero, sometimes Goran Dragic.
Do they dare put Jimmy on him?
On Ben?
Yeah. Do they dare?
Yeah. They
probably,
have.
Right?
They
have. That might be the move
they
in the
have.
Postseason.
Yeah, and
especially
and Jimmy is strong, but
well, especially
Ben has about 5 inches on him.
If there's bad blood there, that counts. I don't know who responds, but I would think that Jimmy
games,
Butler.
Though, we haven't seen bad blood between those two.
No.
In the
no.
games, I mean.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
games
yeah.
They've played.
But if there is going to be some, Jimmy Butler's been used to this. Jimmy Butler,
100%.
He lives in the dark like Bane. You know 100%. What I mean?
I wonder if they start either Miles Leonard Myers Leonard.
Yep.
Iguodala, Jay Crowder.
Oh, Crowder maybe. I could see that. I don't think they love matching up with the Sixers defensively.
No, the Sixers,
they got to scramble a little bit.
And the Heat gave them problems as well, but the Sixers have given them problems. One more. What's the Toronto Raptors? Pascal Siakam.
We've already seen what they do.
Yeah. And Ben can overpower him.
Yeah.
Pascal Siakam is strong. He's a good defender.
Ben Toronto does all that help stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. Like their team defense is tremendous.
Yeah. And Gasol's always going to be around unless you've got Embiid, way out.
Work. Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be tricky. Could be tricky.
All right. 610-632-0975. We go to Glassboro. Black Gritty out in the streets. What's going on?
Man, how you know in these streets, brother? Because that's where I live, brother, in these streets. My favorite part when I call in is when the screener says, what's your name? And I say, Black Gritty. They say, excuse me, say what? I say, Black Gritty. You know, like Gritty, but black. You know what I mean? So they going to get it. They going to know I'm calling. You know what I'm sitting here doing in the dark in the back cave? I'm watching Tim Duncan and Dave Robinson play basketball. And I'm just watching wave upon wave of them taking turns, crashing the paint on the Knicks, and nobody could stop them. I'm just wondering if maybe we had a coach from the lineage of Popovich that could teach the ways of having two big men skilled down low. I'm dreaming. I'm sorry. Maybe
he's a Boonhoser.
Asking for a little too much. You know what I mean?
Sorry.
Asking for a little too much. I don't know. I'm excited for some kind of change again because that's all we do here is we change, right? So if it don't work, you got to try and fix it. So this is Brett's new thing. We're going to find out these 8 games will work. I like Shake. I personally think Shake's a backup point guard. I'm not really trying to have up in my starting situation, but I didn't build the team, so it is what it is. So I'm just waiting to see what happens. What I can't have happen is Ben getting upset because he's not touching the ball enough, and then I got two people pouting because they don't get the ball. Because I've seen it in the playoffs before where Joel doesn't get the ball, he's not happy, and then when the ball's taken out of Ben's hands, he's just in the corner, and I forget he's even on the court sometimes. Like, that's not even making fun or anything like that. It's like legit. Is Ben Simmons on the floor right now or not? Because I haven't seen him do anything. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it better work. And if not, it's going to get changed immediately anyway because we got to get rid of Brett. And then, like I said, the other call is about something about getting a new coach, let Brand do his thing. Okay, fine. Brand out here giving out all these crazy contracts. He better give out a crazy great contract for a coach with a system and a plan to come up in here because that's what we need. So we're going to see what happens. We're going to see if Shake can shake it. You know what I mean? We're going to see. But I'm sitting here watching Tim Duncan and Dave Robinson. Everyone will go on YouTube and just check out what happens. We got two big guys playing and you figure out a way to get it done. Because I'm tired of hearing Stephen A. Smith and everybody tell me I got to trade one of these dudes. I'm not trading two all-world players. I'm getting a coach in here, and I'm figuring it out. They're in the contract. I'm excited.
No, I hear you. And Black Gritty, be safe in the streets, man.
Take care.
All day, brother. All day.
You got it, man. We talked about this the other night. Well, yesterday, I think it was, with Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah.
Marcus Spears, who was quiet, and Jay Williams. It was like, seriously, this is what we're doing again? You're talking about these two guys splitting them up again?
Well, I mean,
let's do that again.
It always, no one's untradeable. It's not a thing. Like, to say that someone's untradeable is like you're not listening to what any other trade could be, right? So, like, I never say that someone's untradeable unless you've got the nuts, unless you've got the absolute best thing and there's nothing else that you would ever trade for it ever. But, like, I don't know. Like, when I look at, like, the coaches and stuff, I don't know, man. Like, it's getting late. Are you a coach that wants to come in? I think that it is attractive because you got some talent.
Mm-hmm.
But if Brett Brown moves out and ownership and Elton Brand are telling you, like, you know, I'm sure that you're going to tell us that you like our young talent and that you like our core and stuff like that. Just so you know, that's the team. Like, Simmons and Embiid are there, period. And you're a coach that's like, all right, it's 2020 basketball. Your best player is a center when there are like 5 actual centers in the entire league. Mm-hmm. And a guy might be a point guard, might not be a point guard, not interested in shooting from the outside. Good players, but like also very different from a lot of other teams in the league in terms of your team setup. I think it's tough to find the right person. I really, really do. I think it's going to be tough to find the right person. Plus, the other part, D, is that eventually there's going to be like, all right, Sixers haven't advanced past the second round of the playoffs. You had new coaches. You had Jimmy Butler in and out, Dario Saric in and out, Robert Covington in and out, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, all right, the only common denominator is that it's been Simmons and Embiid here the whole time. Like, I don't think that anybody blames, like, Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka for the Thunder never winning an NBA title. But eventually it's like, all right, this thing's got to go. Like, eventually you've got to break it up. So I get why people would say that. It's way too early, though. Way, way, way too early in these guys' careers.
Way too early.
Yeah.
You get, especially with another coach as a possibility, you give them that time.
Sure, absolutely.
Give them that time to see if it works. And you give your general manager a time. And there's a video out there of Ben Simmons in the shooting drill.
Yeah.
Catch, shoot. You know, just effortless, and we've seen it before, and I don't care.
You don't get excited about the video, D?
Nah.
That's tough.
Nah.
That's tough. That's harsh, man.
Nah. 610-632-0975, Aaron in Drexel Hill. Aaron, how you doing tonight?
What's up, Divine? What's going on, man? How you guys doing tonight?
Hanging out with Joe Torti and, yes, of course, Josh Rabick here.
Yes. So I've really been trying to let this go, where I'm struggling to let this go because I'm extremely frustrated. But I just have a couple quick questions I just want to ask you guys. My first question is, if Shake was put into the lineup to add additional shooting and scoring, why didn't Brett think about doing the same thing with Alex Burke? If that was the concern, if that was the thought process behind putting Shake in the lineup, that's
number one. I'm wondering if he feels that he's not enough of a guard to initiate things in terms of point guard stuff. He's more of just go out there and get yours because we need you to get us a bucket.
Oh, okay. My second thing is the caller right before this last caller pointed out something that has been on my mind. Me and you talked about the other day about the matchups, and Ben, I acknowledge that Ben's progression over the years, especially in the post, has gotten really good, but it's also because he was doing this against guys that he was taller than and physically more opposing than. Now you're about to put him up against players that actually match him for the most part in height, because the average power forward is about 6'9", and that can match him for the most part in strength. So the only thing he has over them is athleticism. Two of the top four players that we may see in the Eastern Conference playoffs is Giannis and Siakam. They're both about as athletic and skilled as Ben is, even more skilled, I would say, than Ben is in particular. And then my third question is, that was really a statement, not so much a question. My third question is, with Ben at the four, you now move Tobias to the three. How is Brett going to utilize him at the three, where he already showed in the beginning of the season he struggled to get him good looks at the three and was able to get him better looks when he moved to the four?
I think that has to do with Shake Milton as well, being able to break down someone, possibly get ahead of his man, and now the defense collapsed and you find some opportunities. Joel Embiid establishing a low block like we know he can do. And that also being something for Tobias Harris. And then seeing what we get from Ben Simmons as well, and how that might also impact what type of shots Tobias Harris gets. And let's not ignore, when we talk about pick and rolls, if they're going to incorporate more pick and roll with Ben Simmons as a screen man, you do that with Tobias Harris as well, because we saw it being an effective thing with the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm tired of saying it, right? Because that was now almost a full season ago. Or more than a full season ago, but we've seen it. So can he do it again there? That is the job of Brett Brown, to figure out with all of these offensive pieces, because even Josh Richardson can give you 19 a night if you allow him to. He has to figure that part out.
Can I ask one more question and I'm done, and you guys can hang up on me? My last question is, are we throwing Shake in too soon? To me, it's like the throwing the young, raw quarterback in to that starting lineup too soon. What happens if his confidence is broken? What happens if the other top elite point guards who've already been established in the league start giving him work? Where do you go from there? And then my very last thing I just want to say to you guys, and then I'm completely done with this. What makes our new lineup any different from the rest of the league now? That's it.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, man. So two things. One, like, we have to defer to a guy like Barrett Brooks, who's been in the spotlight and been in this position before, where I asked him the exact same question when he was on with us at 7 o'clock. You know, is Shake ready for this? And the answer is pretty much you got to be ready. Like, you have to be ready anytime the opportunity is there. I don't necessarily view it as potentially breaking a franchise quarterback by putting him in too early, because, like, let's face it, he's not David Carr, and this isn't the Houston Texans. The Sixers aren't so deficient that Shake Milton's going to get destroyed by being out there. They're a good team. They're a playoff team. They have pieces. Shake's going to be okay. Like, I think that's going to be, you know, the big part of it. And what was Aaron's last question? What was the last thing he said?
The last part was asking what makes the team, this lineup now, different separates them from the NBA.
Well, you hit it on the head, man. It's not about being different anymore. Like, they tried different. Different worked in some areas, didn't work in some other areas. The reason that they did this is to look like other teams in the NBA. I believe that in my heart.
But still feel you have those special talents in Embiid and Simmons.
Sure, yeah.
That separates you from the rest.
Yeah.
But, and it's not going to separate you from Milwaukee or Toronto in that way, but it'll put you in there, and let's man up, head up, toss the ball up, and let's see what happens. Jump us in the court. We go from there.
But if they've got a talented team, it shouldn't be lineup gimmicks that are why they win. It should be that you got the best players, and your guys are better than their guys. This lineup allows you to determine whether that's true or not.
It allows you a little bit of flexibility.
Sure.
It allows you to have some other flexibility when other guys come in, like Al Horford, Matisse Thybulle, maybe even Mike Scott. Who knows about Furkan Korkmaz, Glenn Robinson III, and Alec Burks. That's as far as they go with those guys. And I'm guessing they'll only go with those 10 in some capacity to try to figure out where it goes. But they do have stuff. Is the stuff good enough? The question overall. Does it separate them? Right now, no. We have to see if it separates them, Aaron, from the rest of the Eastern Conference and do what they need to do. Ted Knight, 75, Theo says, Ben Simmons' year at LSU was one of the weakest years in the SEC in recent history, and Ben's team only won 15 games and missed the tournament. Theo, though,
that's true.
As talented as he is, and that's true, I didn't blame him much. I put other stuff on some of these other guys, like Blakely looking for his, Quarterman looking for his, and Simmons looking for his.
Just honestly, too, LSU comes and goes, don't they? Like,
yeah.
You wouldn't consider LSU a traditional bat. There are some years where they're really, really good, and then there's some Ben Simmons years.
And they should have made it to the tournament. They did not.
Yeah.
He takes some of that blame. I'm not putting it all on him, though, because he still did enough where it made him the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. I can't. I know it. I know I was tuning in. I was watching it. I did not care if they were winning or not. I just wanted to see him. I'll be honest with you. I like Blakeney, and I was like, all right, let's see what he does. Quarterman, I knew a little bit, and then I was like, oh, these dudes just jack it up. Whoa. And Ben played a lot of off the ball. And the coach just didn't seem like he knew what was going on. Then you hear the stories about, was he too much of a big shot where they didn't like playing with him? So the dynamic, there were a lot of things pointed at him, the coach, and the surrounding players as well. He should not have gone there in the first place. But
he got it from all angles, man. He was getting it from his Australian teammates back home.
Yeah, was he?
Gets here.
Yep.
And he's getting it over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's rough, man.
The only thing we didn't hear bad about him was while he was in high school, Monverde.
Right.
You didn't hear anything bad there.
You know why? Because they're from everywhere.
And
Monverde's from everywhere.
And that coach was coaching. Yeah.
Those guys know what they're doing.
610-632-0975. Rick, you start us off when we return. Josh Rabick producing. Joe Torti, Devon Givens, until 10 here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.